Welcome to the fourth edition of the 2014 SSDI podcast series. During this podcast, we feature the previous year winners in the Excellence in TBED Awards program. We use these podcasts to give insight into some of the best and most successful TBED programs from around the country. Today, we will be speaking with Susan Wyndham Bannister, President and CEO of the Massachusetts Life Sciences Center. MLSC was awarded the SSTI Excellence in TBED Award in 2013 for their success in improving the competitiveness of existing industries. Susan, thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Again, we remain very excited about being one of the awardees, and it's a pleasure to have a chance to speak with you today.
Let's give our listeners some background a little bit. So could you give us a brief history of the center and some background and how it fits within the ecosystem of the state?
Yes, the Massachusetts Life Sciences Center is administering an initiative to invest $1 billion in the Massachusetts Life Sciences ecosystem over a 10-year period. This Life Sciences initiative was enacted by our legislature in June of 2008. It's a vision of Governor Deval Patrick, who announced it in 2007. And really within just that 12-month period, the legislature had enacted, the governor had signed this initiative. We are a quasi-public agency. We are funded wholly by the state, but we are governed by a board of directors. And it really is our mission to strengthen the life sciences cluster in Massachusetts and to really turn it into an innovation ecosystem. We are governed, as I said, by a board of directors. We have as our stakeholders both industry and academia, our universities and our medical centers. And there are five focus areas within life sciences, if you will, that are the purview of the center: pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, medical devices, medical diagnostics, and bioinformatics. We are not a policy-making or policy-promulgating organization. We are not an advocacy group. We are an investment group. So we work very closely within the innovation ecosystem of Massachusetts with our two trade associations, Mass Bio for biopharma, Mass Medic, which is medical device. We are often called upon to render input to policy issues at the state level, but we really are primarily a funding organization. So we are looking to, and I'll talk about this a little later, strengthen the innovation platform here in Massachusetts and to really use our dollars as well to invest in collaborative initiatives that will pull together our investors, our academic institutions, industry into a high-performing innovation ecosystem.
And you mentioned investment multiple times. Could you talk a little bit about the series of programs that is offered and how they fit to fill gaps in the system?
Absolutely. So you mentioned a very key word, and that is gap and gap closure, and that is really what underlies our strategy. So very often, government initiatives take a very top-down approach. And our approach is very much bottoms up. We are looking to fill gaps that really do hinder the pace and the success of innovation. So that is moving from discovery through development to commercialization. And there are five gap areas that we target with our investments. The first is to invest in translational research. There have been historically good funding sources for basic research, but not always as much funding available for translational research. That's number one. Number two, we invest directly in the pipeline of young companies in Massachusetts, and we invest in entrepreneurship by funding and supporting programs that really do encourage company formation. And we have a program that makes funding available to young companies that are in the proof of concept, proof of principle space. And the purpose of that program is really to bridge them to a true Series A or Series B investment. So pipeline of young companies, entrepreneurship, that's our, is our second priority for our investment programs. The third is workforce development. As we are providing incentives to grow jobs in the life sciences in Massachusetts, we're also paying a lot of attention to the supply of talented workers at all levels, variety of skills that align very well with the needs of industry. So through grants for workforce development programs, grants to our vocational and technical high schools, our community colleges, and our four-year colleges, as well as funding an internship program, we are really looking to invest very heavily in the workforce of the future here in life sciences in Massachusetts. Our fourth priority is infrastructure. This is sometimes not very glamorous work, but these are investments that really have the potential to create large-scale shared resources in Massachusetts, and in some cases, very unique resources that can be made available for shared use by industry as well as academia. So as an example, in some cases, accelerating spaces for young companies. We have funded a biomanufacturing accelerator. We have funded some very, very novel research facilities. We have funded the first cyclotron in, here in Massachusetts that is really focused exclusively on oncology research. So these kinds of large-scale investments that the state can make but really benefit all the members of our life sciences community. And then our last priority, but it is certainly not the least important, is to invest in various types of collaboration, which we do by funding consortia in Massachusetts, by making incentives available for partnership initiatives and projects. And we are investing heavily through this program as well in promoting international collaboration by jointly funding collaborative initiatives with strong life sciences communities around the world.
And to receive this type of funding, could you talk a little bit about the application process for just a general discussion on that?
Yes. Again, in the spirit of having this as a bottoms-up approach where we are really looking to make the relative best use of dollars across competing opportunities, all of our funds are awarded based on competitive processes with different calls for proposals and different solicitations for each of the programs that occur at specific times over the course of a year. One of the ways in which we have really built a strong public-private partnership and a collaborative spirit is by relying very heavily on engaging experts in the life sciences community to guide our investment decisions. And we do that, one, as I mentioned, through our board of directors, which is very multidisciplinary and includes members from academia and industry. Secondly, through a large peer review panel, which will take the first look at applications that come to the center, and they are assigned different applications to review based on their expertise relative to the content of the application. And then we have a scientific advisory board that has about 19 of some of the top experts in Massachusetts from academia, from industry, from the entrepreneurial community, and from the investment community, so VCs and angel investors. And they are probably the primary advisory group to our board of directors in terms of looking at applications for funding and recommending based on this multidisciplinary expertise what they think would be the best projects, the best investments of the center's dollars from the pool of applicants. They keep us very much in touch with the key trends in the marketplace and which applications, which projects, which investments will be most supportive of trends as well as which will be most useful in filling various gaps. Because, again, you have industry, finance, academia, all sitting and taking a look at these applications and thinking about them in the context of gap closure.
You had mentioned the support you received from the state to establish this, to establish the organization. Could you talk a little bit about the current sources of funding for the
Yes.
Life Sciences Center?
Yes, indeed. So as I said, we are funded wholly by the state. And our funds flow from three sources. And those sources create different constraints on how the dollars can be used, but it works to our advantage because it has really enabled us to build a portfolio of investment programs. So, first of all, we receive an appropriation in the state budget each year. We must go each year and present our business case, our rationale for how we've used dollars from the prior year's appropriation during the budget season, when the administration and the legislature are contemplating and preparing, creating, if you will, the budget for the coming fiscal year. That is anticipated by the statute to be up to $25 million a year. So thinking across the 10-year horizon of the program, that would represent one quarter of the $1 billion. So, you know, $250,000 over a 10-year period. Now, like most states, Massachusetts has certainly not been in any way untouched by the recessionary economy. And so we have never received a $25 million appropriation from the legislature, even in the very first year of this initiative. We have been ranging at $10 million, $15 million this fiscal year, FY14, for the state, which began July the 1st. We actually received the highest appropriation that we have received, which was 19.5 of the potential $25 million. And again, this is because we've had a lot of great metrics on job creation, on leverage of our dollars that we could put in front of the legislature. So that's our first source of funding. The second tranche of funding to the center comes from the sale of bonds by the state. So we receive a share of the state's bond cap. Those dollars must be used for capital projects, and that's contemplated in our enabling statute to be $50 million a year for the 10-year period. So as you can see, fully half of the $1 billion is in the form of money that must be used for capital projects. The third tranche is really not cash to the center at all. It is the authorization that we are given by the state's Department of Revenue through the Secretary of Administration and Finance to award up to $25 million in tax incentives each year. These incentives, again, are awarded on a competitive basis, and they are awarded to companies in exchange for job creation. So these incentives actually are one of our fastest job-producing incentives because companies have a 12-month period following the receipt of the tax incentive to create the jobs. They commit to a certain number of jobs. So, again, that is up to $25 million a year, $250 million over the 10-year horizon. So that is what comprises the $1 billion. Now, I want to say very quickly that our strategy for using these dollars has included a public-private partnership model where for every dollar that we invest, we are looking for a matching dollar, obviously, from the private sector. And so year-to-date, the Life Sciences Center over the 5 years of this initiative has invested just about $500 million. So we're pretty much on track against the spending plan, the funding plan of the initiative, again, a bit behind because of the state's budgetary challenges. But the good news is that we have leveraged our $500 million with $1.3 billion of matching investment from industry. So we've really demonstrated that if the state steps forward and looks to fill gaps, that hinder the process of innovation, industry will absolutely, and the investment community will step up alongside of us and provide matching dollars. So very quickly, I mentioned that one of the things that we fund are early stage companies. We have put about $18 million of investment into over 20 young companies. But the good news is that VCs and angels have put another $100 million into those companies. So they're watching where we invest. We're doing that investment based on this very, very skilled, multidisciplinary panel of experts. And so very often then industry or the investment community will come in alongside us or right behind us and fund. So it's provided a huge amount of leverage on the state dollars.
And I think one of the things you mentioned was having all those stakeholders at the table. Could you talk a little bit about what sort of metrics you track, how that data is collected, and how you publicize those metrics to stakeholders and people within the state so that they can kind of see the impact that you have been able to achieve?
Yes. So we track a variety of metrics, obviously because we are an economic development entity. This is our primary mission. It is to drive economic growth in Massachusetts through investments in life sciences. So capital investments, growth by industry in the state, job creation are very, very important roll-up metrics. And the leverage metric that I just mentioned is also extremely important because it shows engagement and it shows the use of state dollars to create leverage that motivates or is a magnet for private sector investment. So these are very important roll-up metrics. But because each of our programs has somewhat different objectives, so as I mentioned, workforce development, the growth of young companies, translational research, we have different metrics that attach to each of those programs. In some cases, we're tracking them through self-reported data from our various grantees. Other metrics we are able to track directly. We also engaged two well-known labor economists last year from Northeastern University, Dr. Barry Bluestone and Dr. Alan Clayton Matthews, to do an independent assessment of job creation metrics, the ROI to the state on our tax incentives, and various other assessments of economic impact. So that was a very independent third-party study. It was published by the Boston Foundation. And then we also report out metrics in a number of different ways. On our website, we report them through our annual report. And Massachusetts has an Office of Performance Management. We must submit each year a business plan to that Office of Performance Management, the OPM, with specific metrics that we are tracking through our programs, and we report to them each year on those metrics. So as an example, we do surveys of all of our interns. So the center has funded over 1,300 internships. We survey all of the participating interns. We're doing a longitudinal study of those interns to really see what the impact is of their participation on their interest in a career in life sciences, on their actual rates of getting hired, and their decisions to remain in Massachusetts for their employment once they graduate. So a variety of different metrics that tie to the specific goals of our different programs in a variety of different ways that we make those available to the public.
Finally, to wrap everything up, if a state or a region was looking to establish a similar type of program, what lessons have you learned and what advice would you give to them?
I think a number of lessons. As I said, a bottoms-up approach is very consistent with the way that innovation itself happens. So I think that as opposed to deciding on very specific types of funding that will be done with a top-down approach, this is what will be done and this is how it will be done, we've created vehicles that create opportunities for various players to approach us for funding. We've organized those around thematic areas that we know are important gaps to fill. So I would say, one, a bottoms-up approach is very important. Secondly, we've really learned that it's important to invest in the pipeline of early-stage companies. They really do represent the cutting edge. This is where innovation is really taking place. And if you have a vibrant community of early-stage companies, large companies pay attention and are often very interested in placing or having a footprint to be close to vibrant communities of early-stage companies. I think another learning has been the value of making the program competitive, creating mechanisms for looking side by side at a variety of funding opportunities to make a relative decision about the best choices. And that brings me then, I think, to what is our most important learning, and that is the engagement of the expert community. It really, the wisdom of crowds brings a tremendous variety of perspective. It gets everyone in the life sciences community interested in what's going on with this initiative, feeling a sense of ownership for what is going on. And at the end of the day, I think has really been responsible for our making some very, very good decisions that have delivered some very, very good returns.
Susan, I want to thank you for joining us today and congratulate you again for the award.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you, and thanks, you know, just to SSTI and the great work that it's doing in making information available to all of us so that we all have these learning opportunities.
I also want to thank the listeners who will be listening to this podcast, and if anyone is interested in learning more about MLSC, please visit the website at masslifesciences.com. And for more information on the awards program, including application deadlines for the 2014 awards, please visit sstiawards.org. Thank you again, Susan, and everyone have a great day.